Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang, offering ourselves at His lotus feet. We continue this journey of swimming in the stream of His beautiful wisdom that He has so painstakingly penned for us many, many decades ago, the stream of Prema Vahini. In fact, today is the 103rd session of Vahini Satsang. It's close to 2 years that we have had this opportunity to dwell on His words. And I think at the end of every session we have felt that our discussion was so incomprehensive, so inadequate, because there is so much that can be ruminated upon, and what we have offered is just one little perspective, and that is how the words of the Divine are. Just like the Divine is infinite, His words, the profundity of His words are also infinite. So today we are in the last session of Prema Vahini Satsang, in the sense that we are dealing with the last segment of the last chapter of Prema Vahini, but perhaps we will have a few more sessions just to recap and summarize whatever we have discussed over all these weeks. But before we listen to Bhagwan's message, let me also share with you that by Bhagwan's blessings, we have today a guest with us, joining us on this landmark session. He's Mr. Raj Srivastan from US, an ardent devotee of Bhagwan for many, many decades. Professionally, he's an experienced corporate and securities attorney with a management consulting background, practicing in the US for nearly 2 decades. He's engaged in class and derivative litigation as counsel for the boards of Fortune 500 companies, and is engaged in defending directors and officers through US corporate law firms. He has assisted justices and judges at the Supreme Court of Delaware and federal bankruptcy courts in public service, also at the US Securities and Exchange Commission's Enforcement Division to prosecute Wall Street corporate and securities fraud. In fact, he has contributed to successes in various kinds of financial fraud prosecutions against big banks, working beside the US Department of Justice and other watchdog agencies. He has used his sharp legal skills to fight against adharma and injustice done to disabled persons, neglected and abandoned children, abused or battered women. He has fought against termination of parental rights, worked to protect abused prisoners and senior citizens who are victims of fraud, and so on. He practiced law for 2 years in India, and during this time he stood against overbilling and other medical malpractices done by rich corporate hospitals in India. He moved to the US in 1999. He's admitted to practice law in India, in the US Supreme Court, as well as in the Supreme Courts of New York, Delaware, Washington, D.C., and US federal courts. So someone who has had a very distinguished professional background, but for him, the crowning moment of his all these experience is the chance to teach Bhagwan students in the Prashant Lim campus, in the Vrindavan campus, in the Anandpur campus, wherever he gets an opportunity to guide the management students. He does that as a visiting faculty of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. So it's really our blessing that we have him as we discuss the ultimate segment of Prema Vahini. Once again, offering ourselves at his lotus feet, let's begin this session. I will play for you now the segment 30.15, and then we'll pray to Swami to guide our thoughts.
మనస్సున పవిత్ర విషయక పరిశ్రమ చేయని హృదయమే దుర్గుణములకు విశ్రాంతి భవనముగా ఉండును. ఈ విషయమును మోక్షమును కోరువారు, ఏకాగ్రతను పొందగోరువారు, పెద్దలు కాగోరువారు ముఖ్యముగా గ్రహించవలసి ఉన్నది. ఇట్టి ఆత్మజ్ఞానము పొందుటకు బ్రాహ్మణులు, ఆశ్రమవాసులకు సన్యాసులు అర్హులంటారు, కాని బ్రహ్మనిష్ట కలిగినవారు ఎవరైనా ఆత్మజ్ఞానమును పొందవచ్చును. అందుకనే ఉపనిషత్ వచనము కూడా ఇట్లే నుడివినది, నాశ్రమం కారణం ముక్తేహే దర్శనాని నకారణం, తథైవ సర్వకర్మాణి జ్ఞానమేవహి కారణం. అట్టి పరబ్రహ్మమగు పరమాత్మ చింతనకు కాల నియమము లేదు, పుణ్యదేశమనియు ప్రత్యేక స్థలమనియూ లేదు. ఏ కాలమైనను, ఏ స్థలమునైనను, ఏ సమయమున చిత్తము పరమాత్మయందు రమించునో అదే పుణ్యస్థలము, అదే పుణ్యకాలము అగుచుండును. ఎచ్చటనున్న అచ్చటనే చింతన చేయుచూ ఉండవచ్చును. అందుకనే మునుపు ఈ రీతిగా తెలియపరచటం. న కాలనియమో ఎత్ర న దేశస్య స్థలస్య చ, యత్రాస్య రమతే చిత్తం తత్ర ధ్యానేన కేవలం. ఇట్టి సర్వనిష్టాగరిష్ఠులై, సర్వసార సహితులై, అంతఃకరణ శుద్ధి కలిగిన వారల వల్ల లోకము క్షేమము కలుగగలదు. అట్టి వారి అనుగ్రహమునకు పాత్రులై, వారి ప్రార్థనల వలన దేశక్షేమమును కోరి ఉన్న బాధలను పోగొట్ట ప్రయత్నించుటకు సర్వులు ఈ నిమిషము నుండియే పరమాత్మని ప్రార్థనలు సల్పుదురుగాక, లోకక్షేమమును పొందుదురుగాక.
The heart of the person who does not strive to cultivate his mind with sacred thoughts is certain to be the rest house of evil tendencies. This has to be borne in mind by all those who aspire for salvation, who strive for one-pointedness, and who seek to become noble men. It is generally believed that only those who belong to the Brahmin caste or have embraced monkhood are eligible for the knowledge of the Atma. But in reality, anyone who is a Brahmanishta, that is, true and sincere seeker of truth, can acquire self-realization. In fact, the Upanishads emphasize this. Na asramam karanam muktehe, darshanani na karanam, tataiva sarva karmani jnanameva hi karanam, which means jnana alone is the cause of liberation, not ashrama or philosophy. To establish oneself in the contemplation of the omnipresent Lord, there is no limitation of time or space. There is nothing like a sacred land or a special time for this. Wherever the mind revels in the contemplation of the divine, that is the holy place. Whenever it does so, that is the auspicious moment. There and then one must meditate on the Lord. That is why it has been enunciated in our scriptures. Na kala niyamo yatra, na desasya sthalasya cha, yatrasya ramate chittam tatra dhyanena kevalam, which means, for meditation on God, there is no fixed time or place. When and where the mind so desires, then and there is the time and place. It is such enlightened beings who understand the essence of everything around and have disciplined minds along with pure hearts who truly contribute to the welfare of the world. Right from this moment, everyone should pray to the Almighty and deserve the blessings of such souls for the welfare of the nation. This will result in the lessening of the sufferings around us and lead to the well-being of the whole world.
So that is what is there for us for discussion today. And Bhagwan begins by saying that the heart of the person who does not strive to cultivate his mind with sacred thoughts is certain to be the rest house of evil tendencies. In fact, if we see the entire segment today, Bhagwan has laid so much emphasis on purity. I remember once Bhagwan saying that you don't need a separate religion, you know, don't need a separate ritual, you don't need a separate sadhana. All you need is a pure heart. That's it. A pure heart is the essence of all spiritual practices. And here Bhagavan is stressing so much on that actually, that, you know, if you have that purity, if that is your goal, then it is the blessing of such souls that the world will become a better place. It is with the blessing of such souls. In fact, when I was reading a little bit on what Bhagavan has said on purity, interestingly I found that on so many occasions when Bhagavan has spoken on this topic, Swami would say that purity is related to what we consume, and Swami referred to the consumption in terms of food and in terms of our recreational activities. So Swami came back to your food habits, your recreational habits, how you use your sense organs, basically. And that is what purity is all about. And Bhagavan, very detailed, has time and again mentioned about the purity of the food and how, you know, the gross part of the food becomes the gross part of your body and a subtle part of the food becomes your thoughts. And I think that is something that even though many of us don't feel it apparently, but I think for any spiritual aspirant, that is something to get started. I mean, that is something very basic. It looks like, you know, if you want purity of your mind, then you have to ensure that what you consume is pure. And once you are on that path, then it will help you to keep your one-pointedness on the divine. I think only when you have your, as Swami says, the antakarana, you need purity, Bhagavan says, at four levels. So Swami says, you need bhusubratha, purity of the place, you need bhava subratha, purity of the feeling, you have deha subratha, purity of the body, and Swami says atma subratha, Swami says purity of your inner being. So I think a spiritual aspirant has to constantly keep questioning and keep reflecting and keep ensuring that everything that he consumes is pure, so that ultimately only when he is filled with that purity, then it will lead for him to see that divinity. Swami talks about purity, unity and divinity. I mean, to see the unity of creation can happen only when you have a pure vision. And once you experience that unity of divinity everywhere, then you become divine. I mean, so that is sort of, Swami is very succinctly put it as purity, unity, you know, divinity. It's everything is sort of contained in that if you really dwell into it. Isn't it, Mr. Raj?
First, I'd like to offer my humble pranams to Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, my master, my guru. Thank you for this opportunity, Brother Prushti.
It's our pleasure. Yes.
And good evening to my dear brother, Sai Prakash.
Sai Ram, sir. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram. I tend to completely agree. Swami also said, bend the body, mend the senses, and end the mind.
Yes.
Okay. But here, the focus is on the mind. Yes. As a co-conspirator, yes, with the heart. So putting it in legal parlance for you. So without the mind conspiring to help the heart can't do anything by itself.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami in the Prema Vahini, just yesterday when I was reading it, I found a very interesting analogy to a motor vehicle.
Uh-huh.
So Swami says the steering wheel is the external world's guide. And if the external world is guided, or rather the vehicle is guided well in the external world, then the four wheels will align themselves with the direction of the steering wheel.
Yes.
So which means the antakarnas, the, yes, internal organs and, yes, the sense organs will align themselves with the steering. But the steering has to come from the mind.
Yes.
The mind has to steer the heart. And then the heart will connect itself to the Atma, and the Atma Vidya will take a person to liberation. You talked about purity. Swami devotes an entire chapter in Prema Vahini for sadhus.
Yes.
And also on vanaprasthas.
Yes.
And the vanaprastha, the food they consume.
Yes.
The way they have to live, yes. Purify themselves, to wash away any vestiges or samskaras.
Yes.
Which will then result in a rebirth for the people.
Correct.
So the entire focus is on that one-pointedness.
Mm.
And that one-pointedness, I agree, can only be accomplished through purification of the senses, purification of the mind, and purification of the heart. And food is an integral aspect of that. Swami says food is not food, food is medicine.
Mm.
And it's medicine for the ailments that the body goes through,
mm.
and the ailments that the mind goes through.
Mm.
And he says the disease that the humankind suffer is rebirth. And he discusses that specifically in the Prema Vahini. So the focus that in the little chapter, end of the chapter that we are discussing, the focus is on the heart. The heart has to be mended by the mind, guided and mended by the mind. He also talks about caste, where there's a lot of confusion in today's world about who has the, should I say, the authority to follow scriptures.
Mm.
And that in itself is an egoistical representation of spirituality, which is completely wrong and misses the point. And our Bharatiya culture has been punctuated with extraordinary cases of individuals who were born in the so-called lower castes.
Absolutely.
One is Shabari, as you know.
Yes. I think many of our saints actually belong to not the Brahmin caste.
Yes. They belong to either the Kshatriya or the, even the Shudra class.
Yeah, you have a potter, you have a weaver, you have a washerman.
Yes, and you have a hunter.
You have a hunter.
The hunter was Arjuna reborn as Dina in Indian folklore, where he upset Lord Shiva. And so he was reborn as a hunter. But do not miss the fact that he was so pure. It's God judges the intentions.
Yes.
He does not judge the presentation.
Yes.
The presentation can be completely awry, but it is the intention that he looks at. In that's a very interesting case of Dina, or as he is called, Kanapan.
Yes.
Kanapan was the hunter who used to offer water from his mouth to consecrate the lingam. And he used to offer the dead animals as an offering, including swine, pig, which is considered to be taboo in Islam as well as in Christianity. And the interesting thing was when he offered his eye, one eye, because he saw the lingam weep, blood. And then when he pulled out one eye, he saw the other eye of the lingam also bleeding.
Hmm.
And here's the point that I'm trying to make that Shabari made with Lord Rama. He put his foot, the big foot, his big toe of his foot on the eye so as to get the coordinates right. Just imagine if anybody considered that today being done in a temple, it would be considered absolutely unthinkable, sacrilegious. Well, he then plucks out his eye and puts it on that so that he doesn't miss the place where the eye has to be placed. And Lord Shiva was so impressed that he gave him back both his eyes. Now there's a lesson and a moral in this. The moral is, don't look at the externalities. Look at the internalities.
Yes.
But our world is so lopsided that they have missed the point. The whole Bhagavad Gita, the Sai Prema Vahini, all the Vahinis, all about internal, the heart. And you're absolutely right. So I've taken up a lot of time. Brother Sai Prakash might have some points to add on this. And I'm sure they'll be very profound.
All points are profound because these are Swami's points, not our points. But there's an interesting definition I found in the Prema Dhara, which is a compilation of letters which Swami had written to his students. And it is the simplest of definitions and most startling. So there, Swami says, a pure heart is one which gets inspired. So the definition of a pure heart is one which gets inspired. And, you know, it somehow struck a chord in my heart. And I was trying to wonder what it actually means. So, you know, in a moment of inspiration, there is no mind, if you look at it. A moment of inspiration, a moment of, you know, a revelation is something which happens spontaneously in the absence of the mind. And that's common with many scientists, many artists and many musicians. So when they are attuned to their higher self. So in that sense of inspiration, so he says a pure heart is one which gets inspired. Mm-hmm. And that is such a beautiful definition which Swami has given in Premadara. And Swami is always, like we were speaking about food, and he said, of course, it's not just what you take through the mouth, it's what you take through your eyes, what you hear, what you smell, everything is food. And there is another beautiful aspect when it comes to purifying the heart and purifying yourself before you enter into any kind of spiritual endeavors. So what Swami often, like many people, they look at spirituality as a technicality. Now, you cannot become spiritual by practicing a pattern, a set of yogas, yogasanas. I'm doing my breath control. Oh my God, I have to do it for 3 minutes extra. And no problem. I have, in my busy schedule, I've incorporated that. So half the time you're doing business with God.
I mean,
God.
Instead of spiritual, you're just becoming ritualistic, not spiritualist.
No,
that's right.
Ritualistic, and you think you're becoming spiritualistic, but yes. What in Dhyana Vahini, a beautiful analogy which Swami gives, which says that purity and goodness is necessary at the base. The first step is purity and goodness. And he says, you may try to plant a seed and you will want it to sprout and grow into a sapling and into a tree. But unless there's fertility in the soil, it will not grow. So he says, you want the fruits of spiritual fulfillment, but unless there is purity and goodness in you and good character, that is the fertility of the soil into which you can sow your seed. So I thought that's the importance of purity and pure heart.
Wow, in fact, that reminds me of what Mahatma Gandhi said on one occasion. He said, one pure soul can wipe off the hatred of millions. And I think that is what Bhagwan is referring to here, that everyone should pray to the Almighty and deserve the blessings of such souls for the welfare of the nation.
Yes.
Once, because, you know, what one inspired mind can do, one inspired heart can do is phenomenal. And that's where Bhagwan is telling that for all you need here is not where you come from or where you were born or, you know, which caste you belong to, but you should have that sincere yearning to acquire that wisdom, because only wisdom, jnana alone, is the cause of is the liberation that Bhagwan is talking about here. In fact, in another discourse, when I was ruminating on this concept of purity, Bhagwan said that this antakarana that we have, so it has four kind of defects.
Okay.
So I said first is bhranti.
Yes.
I think probably you would have come across this before, Sai Prakash, in your Shravana Mananam series.
Right.
Yeah, bhranti, Swami says. So bhranti is the deluded state of mind in which, you know, one mistakes a rope for a snake and a snake for a rope. And basically you think of something what is unreal as real and real as unreal. And
delusion.
Delusion, basically. Right. It's delusion. So whatever is temporary, you think of it as permanent. Whatever is permanent, you think that is going to pass and it's not important. And Swami says, it is this delusion that leads to dangerous situations, and that is pramadam. So the second is pramadam. So the second defect of the antakarana. Antakarana basically is
senses.
Like the inner manas, buddhi, chitta and ahankara. All these four cause together.
Part of the mind.
Part of the mind. Right. So Swami says, you know, the mind has no sort of form of its own. You know, the eyes, the mind sees through the eyes. The mind hears through the ears. So all these organs have their form and name, but the mind does not have anything of its own. And this formless mind is constituted of these four things. Manas, buddhi, chitta and ahankara. Chitta is your
awareness.
Awareness, yes. And buddhi is intelligence and mind, and then ahankara is ego. So this is what Bhagwan says is constitutes antakarana. And the four defects of antakarana is, as we said, first is delusion, bhranti. Then you have pramadam, and where you basically you treat the body as Bhagavan says earlier, when you have delusion, you treat the body as real. You forget that the body is inert and the body is there is something else that is powering the body, which is permanent. It is not the body which is permanent. So when you think of the body as real by itself, so that is when you're fraught with danger. So that is what is pramadam. Then Bhagavan talks about the third effect as karana apatana. Karana apatana, Swami talks about, and says apatana means weakness. The weakness of the organs, the third defect. And this weakness of the senses happens because of various afflictions. And Swami says it is these afflictions which affect the mind and cause mental illnesses. Swami interestingly gives one illustration here. Swami says there is a village where there are two farmers. So there is this village headman and who is the landlord of the village. And then there is a small farmer. And so one day the two bulls of the two farmers, they were involved in a fight. And as a result of which, the headman's bull died. Now the small farmer was deeply worried. So he goes to this headman and he want to convey to him about this unfortunate situation that has happened. So he goes to this chief, and because of his nervousness and fear, while relating to this incident to the landlord, by mistake, he states that it was his bull which was killed by the landlord's bull. So then the landlord, started consoling him, and he started saying, see, it happens,
After all, life is impermanent.
Impermanent. And,
what about the bull?
Exactly. And, even intelligent people commit these mistakes. They kill each other. After all, a bull is an unintelligent animal. It does not have any sense of right and wrong. So, we should not really think so much about their conduct and, time will heal itself, don't worry about it, and all that he consoles. And so even as this is going on, and suddenly the farmer realized the mistake that he had committed, and he says, no, actually what happened was, it was your bull that was killed by my bull.
So he cannot retract his statement.
So immediately now the landlord got enraged. And he said, what nonsense is this? It is such a serious matter. Your bull has killed my bull. I mean, you're so arrogant. Your bull is so arrogant. You people are so arrogant. You commit such heinous sins, and it is an outrage. You have to give me a penalty of, this huge compensation. I think that amount would have, made this little farmer soon then and there. It is an astronomical amount. So Swami said, this is karana apatana. Swami says, you're so the circumstances, you have such varying responses depending on the circumstance, and you're not able, because of this weakness of your senses, you see right as wrong and wrong as right. So Swami says that is the third effect, karana apatana. Basically, Swami says karana is instrument. And so basically your senses have become weak to take the judicious decision. And you are so swayed by the circumstances. And then lastly, Swami says vipralipsa. Vipralipsa is the third effect, and which is jealousy. And Swami says it is the worst defect, and it's very difficult for anyone to come out of it, and it's one of those qualities which ruins every other good virtue that you have. And you just cannot see another person happy, you just cannot stomach that someone else is successful, so prosperous. And so Swami said these are some of the ways that we allow impurity to get into our antakarana. So, but the solution, I remember in another discourse, Swami says that, more than dharma, artha, kama, moksha, the four purushartha, Swami says, only thing actually that you need to do and pursue is purity actually. because that is the summum bonum of everything.
Chitta Shuddhi is Chitta something Shuddhi. Which Swami often said. In fact, there is a very, Swami moves on from this topic towards, you know, you don't have to be a Brahmin or you don't have to be born in a particular, because oftentimes, you know, that was the kind of association that so-and-so is eligible to practice dharma, to practice this, and you have you have eligibility to go into the shrine and worship, and
yes.
so you are higher and purer than
yes.
the rest of them. In this context, there's a beautiful incident which happened in the lives of two old devotees.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the old devotees who have come to Parthi would know about Veenamma and Vijayamma.
Yes.
So Veenamma was the mother and Vijayamma was the daughter, and they would play the Veena and sing mm-hmm. in front of Bhagawan. That was way back in the 60s. And so they had a very interesting experience, not at Prashanthi Nilayam, but in Chennai, in Madras at that time. So Vijayamma and her sister, both of them were young girls, and they were studying in college in Chennai, and they were staying in a small room, in a small room. I'm not exactly sure of the place in Madras where they were staying. And the great sage Chandrasekhar Saraswati, the Shankaracharya of Kanchi, he was on his way to a grand function right opposite their flat, a small room which they were staying in. About 100 meters away, there was a huge Shamiana tent put up and a big function for which Chandrasekhar Saraswati ji, he was going to go there and address the function, etc. So he was actually being brought in a procession. So he was walking and coming, and there were all these dignitaries walking behind him, VVIPs and large number of devotees, etc. As he was coming near their room, he suddenly took a detour and walked into their room. Now everybody in the procession and everybody was absolutely, you know, surprised, because he never does that. He always sticks to his routine and he stuck to his discipline. But on that occasion, he just turned and walked into their room and he told them, "I came," and he said, "Close the door." So they closed the door and he was inside their room and he said, "I came only because I wanted the opportunity to offer an aarti to Bhagawan."
Oh, wow.
So he knew that there is a huge photo of Swami and Shirdi Baba in their house, because he's a gyani. He knows what. And he came inside. He said, "I want to offer an aarti to Bhagawan." And then he took the aarti plate, and with a lot of love and devotion, he chanted some mantras, which they said were sounding so beautiful. And he said, "These mantras are the right way to worship Bhagawan," mm-hmm. he said, and he chanted. Of course, they didn't know what it was. But at the end of the whole thing, he made a very, very profound statement. And he said, this avatar has come for the upliftment of the common man. He said, you cannot go to him by saying, "I am a Brahmin. I follow all these rituals. I follow this madi," that's what they call the traditional way of life. "I follow all these, and because of which I have a higher eligibility to go near this avatar. So these things will never take you close to him. Only purity of heart and love. These are the only things that will take you close to him." So when Swami is talking about purity and your background is not as important, this incident came to mind, because he kind of said that this avatar is meant for the simplest and for everybody to approach him, and only love can take you closer to him.
In fact, if I may join in over here,
yes.
on numerous occasions Swami has said, you don't become a Brahmin by birth, you become a Brahmin by your acts,
exactly.
by your deeds.
Exactly.
And the deeds again are propelled by the mind, and the
right.
mind again has to work with the heart, and then you have to get Brahma Vidya. The last part of this Prema Vahini, that the initial blurb brought out, was the time, place, manner, as I put it.
Yes.
From a legal perspective, it says time, place, manner.
Mm-hmm.
So, time, place, manner of remembrance of God. So, when we talked about the Brahmanistas, the Brahmanistas think of God at all times. They are contemplating. Swami broke that down in very simple acronym, CIA. Constant integrated awareness. When you're constantly aware of the surroundings and who you are. And of course, Swami's entire thrust of his teachings has been on Advaita. That is, you are God. And don't forget that the other person in front of you is also God. In fact, to the extent where he said, when you do Narayan Seva,
yes,
you should not think that you are the one giving. It is you giving yourself.
Hmm.
So it is God feeding God.
Hmm.
And not the other way around, where an individual is feeding God, which develops the ahamkara, which you were just mentioning as one of the impurities, which causes a detraction from the spiritual goal.
Hmm.
So coming back to your point, Brother Sai Prakash, about the preferential treatment given to caste.
Right.
There is a misconception in today's Bharat, India.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's always been there, but it has come to a boil after Mahatma Gandhiji brought out his diffidence against untouchability.
Yes.
That only certain castes have the prerogative to enter temples and worship, which is completely wrong, because God is all reachable by everybody, irrespective of their circumstances, as we brought out in the Shabri example and
yes,
the other examples, as well as the weavers and so on, yes, so Kabir Das and all of these other people.
In fact, in earlier discussion, we also talked about the Puri Jagannath temple in this context,
mm-hmm,
where if you actually see the genesis of the Puri Jagannath shrines, it is so beautiful that the Lord ensured that it was not only the Brahmin, it was someone from the highest caste and someone from the lowest caste. It is the coming together of these two classes of society which led to the installation of the shrine at Puri. Actually, if you go back to the, it's a long story, but that is what is the essence of it. The way Bhagwan orchestrated the entire story was only to communicate that you please eschew any kind of distinction between yourselves on the basis of caste.
If I may add here, there's one other distinction I'd like to make, or throw in over here, element. It's about the concept of sinners. Swami very categorically said there are no sinners.
Yes.
Right? Because the Western concept,
yeah,
the Christian, Islamic and Judaic faiths, they consider sinners to be the very foundation or the basis of the religion, that everybody is a sinner. The concept is wrong, because there are so many instances where sinners have become great spiritualists in India. For instance, Ramayana was written by,
yes,
Valmiki, who was earlier dacoit.
Yes.
What was his name?
Ratnakar.
And then there are so many other instances of individual, including the Pandarinath, the temple as well. He abused his parents.
Yes.
I don't get his
Pundalika
name right away.
Pundalika, yeah.
Yes, he abused his parents, and then he got a vision of the holy rivers,
yes,
who came in the night and danced and washed off the sins from the clothes that people,
yes,
had been washing themselves in.
Yes.
So these are attestations that nobody is perfect, but we are all heading to perfection. And in order to head to that perfection, we need the purity and to overcome these four,
yes,
obstacles that you,
yes,
talked about. The other issue is body consciousness,
which
is a very big stumbling block for a lot of people, not necessarily just the Western,
yes,
religions, which believe only in the body and they don't believe in an afterlife, like the Sanatana Dharma advocates from the outset. So Swami made a point over there saying all of these religions are little pools besides Sanatana Dharma. I think earlier in Premavaini, yes, itself, he discusses this. That if they are all derivatives of Advaita, then obviously they have to represent the Advaitic core. And that means the Advaitic core recognizes the divinity in the other person.
Yes.
So if it recognizes divinity in the other person, then it has to understand that intrinsically we are all pure.
Hmm.
There's no question of any,
yes,
question of us being sinners.
Yes.
So the issue of the delusion, what you talked about, yes, one of the big stumbling blocks, yes, comes into being over there. So that delusion can only be overcome,
yes,
through the purification of the mind.
Yes.
And the recognition of the Atma.
Sir, you had a point on time, place, and you were just about to get into that.
Yeah.
Anything, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you can... I mean, God is present everywhere, basically.
Right.
Entire creation is God. I like to break it down like this. Lord Rama is the divinity, and Sita is nature.
Right.
And Sita is nature, which is Maya. So, irrespective of where you go in creation, you're always going to be in God.
Mm-hmm.
So, it makes no sense to say that you can only pray at certain places, at certain times, and in certain manner. The very fact that you don't need a formula, as you said, spirituality is not an algorithm.
Mm.
Spirituality is a sense of life.
Yes.
It is a state of being.
Yes.
And you can be conscious of God at all times. That is what the Brahmana Istas, Nistas are about. Mm. So you're constantly integrated in God. You're constantly conscious of God. And that comes back to another chapter in Premavaini where Swami talks of the sadhus.
Yes.
You pray for great beings, good leaders, and Swami, the avatars descend, basically. So you need to pray, irrespective of where you are, for the betterment of the world. So that covers the fourth point you talked about, jealousy.
Yes.
So when you wish well for other people, and on a larger canvas for the world itself, then you actually aid the world in bringing down these great leaders who are then able to transform the world.
Yeah. In fact, you know, this whole concept of Advaitic outlook of everything around us is basically the fulcrum of our true spiritual life. And, you know, earlier I referred to this Bhu Subrata, Bhava Subrata, and Deha Subrata and Atma Subrata, basically purity of place, feelings, body, and inner being. In fact, the explanation that Bhagwan gives for all these is, what is purity of place? Swami says, you achieve purity of place only if you can see God at every place.
If I may just quickly add a point, in the Ramayana, there's a point about Lakshmana. In a particular place, he feels, gets a very foreboding, a negative feeling.
Yes.
Lord Rama explains to him that was where the Surpanaka or somebody, that's right. So, I didn't want intend to digress, but please go ahead.
So, and then Bhagwan says that what is purity of feelings? Purity of feelings is if in your every thought, you can think about God. So, in the same way, Bhagwan says that in the purity of the body is again, in your every pore of your body, can you feel God? You know, and then, you know, inner being, again, can you have that feeling to see that everything inside me and everything that I see outside through the internal organs are God? In fact, that reminds me of a very interesting incident that happened many years ago. Dr. Narasimhan, who is the director of the mobile hospital here, once narrated, I mean, those are the initial days of him coming into Bhagwan's fold, and he was someone who was always into social service. Even as a young doctor, he would always take every opportunity to go to the villages and serve the poor. He had not come into Swami's fold, but this was his passion. And after he came to know about Bhagwan, and this whole concept of Narayan Seva was explained to him by Mr. Romal. Romal also is a very ardent devotee of Bhagwan. He's an IFS officer. And so that sort of hit him like a ton of bricks. He said, this is fantastic, you know. We are telling that the other person also is God. The first time he was hearing this concept, and he was really enamored. He was really charmed by that, the whole idea. That, you know, we are not calling this service, we are calling this as Narayan Seva. You know, you have to look upon the other person as God. And then he started thinking, okay, if I have to really practice this, you know, then how do I do it? Like, whoever comes, you know, then I have to treat that person as God, right? So if God was coming, then how would I do it? So he wanted to really do it exactly how he would do if God were to come. So he decided to have this poor feeding session, and so for this Narayan Seva, he said, you know, if God was coming to me to eat, then what would I do? So he printed invitation cards. You know, so you and
the whole nine yards.
And you know, he went to all these homeless people, the beggars, who wherever they were, you know, and he very cordially, you know, he invited them, you know, please, I am having this session. I need your presence, you know, to bless the occasion. You have to come and partake the prasadam and all that. So that is how, you know, he made elaborate arrangements, you know, once they come, where will they keep their footwear? Where will they keep their bags? You know, how will they sit? Who will serve them, how we should, you know, invite them, and what should be served first, just like you would do it, you know, if you're inviting God. So he went through that whole process, and when they came, and he had people serving them with utmost devotion, and so the whole function went on very well. You know, of course, all these people were extremely thrilled. No one had really, you know, cared for them with that much of reverence ever before. And he was extremely satisfied, you know, that he had really done it with all his heart. And so after that, there was an occasion to come to Prashantinilayam with a group of, I think, devotees from Hyderabad who had done some work. And so Bhagwan very kindly called them into the interview room. And so, you know, he had just done the seva. So he was just waiting for the chance to tell Swami about it, you know. So he wanted to tell, you know, this is what I have done, you know, this is what. And so, you know, everyone went into the interview room, and he was sitting. It just happened that he was sitting right at the end, just next to the wall. Of course, the interview room is very small. But then, you know, Swami was not talking to him only. I mean, the conversation happening, Swami was talking to many people in the group. Probably 15-20 people were there, but Swami didn't look at him. I mean, he was just there, and Swami is not talking to him, and he is unable to control. He wants to tell Swami, I have done this, you know. So finally, he just, you know, he blurts out, Swami, we've done Narayan Seva, and you know, Swami said, you know what? When you served all these people, you forgot to put ghee.
Ghee.
Ghee is the ultimate purifier.
Yes.
You forgot to put.
Oh, and that's very symbolic too. Swami explains how it's prepared.
Yeah.
Very symbolically. Yes. And he explains it from the Advaita principle.
Yes.
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 Milk contains butter and ghee.
Yeah, please go on. I think that is interesting.
No, that's I just read that a few days ago about how Swami talks about milk representing Advaita. He says milk, when you churn it produces butter.
Correct.
And then when you boil it, produces ghee.
Yes.
But ghee is part of butter, which in itself is a part of milk. So milk itself gives rise to these two.
Yes.
So then he relates that to the three Vedanta principles of Advaita.
Vishishtadvaita.
And
I remember discussing this.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was an exceptional, as always, Swami is so practical about, you know, explaining the most profound spiritual topics in such a simple way. Mm. I didn't mean to hijack your thing.
Please. No, but I think this was, you know, of course, for him, you know, it was one that, yes, you have done it. Fantastic. You know, but be fulfilled with that, you know, that the whole process of doing it is itself the reward. And
yes,
if you're constantly wondering whether I know it, I am the one who is receiving it.
Yeah. If I may add something over here from one of the other Vahinis, I think it was the Satya Sai Vahini or Gita Vahini, I forget. Swami talks about the four type of karmas which result either in no reincarnation or reincarnation. So he talks about the karma atita, which is Mahapurushas.
Yes.
They perform the tasks without any expectation of any reward. They just do it because it has to be done, and that's the right thing to do.
Yes.
He says there is no rebirth for the such people. Then there is the karma nishkama karmas.
Yes.
There also there is no expectation of a reward. So there is also no rebirth in that. So there is no question of them coming back onto the planet. Then there are the two others, if I may just quickly talk about Sakama Karma and Karma Bharashta.
Karma Bharashta.
Mm. Where you expect the returns and you get those returns and you come back.
Yes.
So even from a selfish perspective, when people are practicing spirituality and they want to really dwell on Advaita, I think even from the perspective of not coming back, although even that is selfish, they should keep in mind that there is a very systematic structure to Sanatana Dharma, where Swami talks about when people come back and when people don't. So all of that which you're talking about, the Narayan Seva also, if it is performed even with a trace of selfishness, Swami says avoid that, you know. So the way to avoid that is, like Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, do not reach for the fruits and offer up all karmas to God.
Yes.
See, in the entire effort or the pursuit of spiritual practice, there is a stage which you don't need any place. You don't, like how Swami is saying here, there's no particular place that is necessary. There's no particular time. You can always contemplate on the Lord in any place you want. That is true when you actually reach a particular stage of your evolution. And maybe at that point in time, you're automatically drawn towards thinking of the Lord all the while.
Mm-hmm.
But as an initial practice, in several other places, Swami has actually said that it is good to have one place.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the Dhyanavahini, he says, do not change your place.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere else in Premavahini also he has mentioned.
He does.
Says, don't have the same place. And, you know, the place acquires vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very good for you to focus. Ekagrata, what Swami is talking about, that concentration and that focus comes when you do your sadhana in the same place at the same time. So he says, at the same place, at the same time, when you do, that energy grows. So something very beautiful which happened when I was in my ninth standard, so I think 91, 92. So one day Swami was coming for darshan, and we were just sitting there. And suddenly he came near me and he said, hey, stand up, boy, stand up. So I stood up. And he said, what is that shloka you tell me? Mad bhakta yatra gayante. Tell me, what is it? And he said, Swami, mad bhakta yatra gayante, tatra tishtami narada. What is that tishtami? Means, it means, wherever my devotee sings,
I come there,
tatra tishtami. Swami said, it is not tishtami. Tishtami means come and go. It is tasyami. He says, wherever my devotee sings, so that place, that place or time or that thing, says wherever he sings. Of course, it can also mean any place.
Yes.
Any place, it can mean any place. But as a practice, you start with one place and then slowly it becomes integral to your entire spiritual evolution.
Yes.
So he says, tatra stasyami.
Yes.
Means I established myself there.
Yes.
So that was a beautiful insight. And another very touching episode, of course, not from the spiritual, which is of course spiritual in its own way. In the year 2006, August 2006, one of the greatest musicians from the Indian, Hindustani family, Ustad Bismillah Khan, he passed away. He passed away in August 2006. And I had just gone home at that time, and there was a documentary coming on Doordarshan. At that point in time, there was a documentary on his life and his experiences. And so a very beautifully made documentary. And he said something amazing. He said, wherever I am in the world, I am thinking only about India.
Who said this?
Ustad Bismillah Khan, the great Shanai player.
He is
one of the world, Bharat Ratna, Ustad Bismillah Khan. He said, wherever I am in the world, I'm thinking only about India. And wherever I'm in India, I'm thinking only about Benares.
Wow.
That is where he is from.
And this is an Islamic gentleman.
Yes, he is. And he said, from his childhood, every day, he has played Shanai in the Balaji temple in Varanasi. And the doors of the temple opened with his music.
Wow.
And he has played that for years and years and decades. And he says, wherever I am in Varanasi, I think only of the Balaji temple.
Wow.
And then he says, in the Balaji temple, there is a sort of corridor. There is a sort of quadrangle, there is a quadrangle and a corridor overlooking the quadrangle. A small, very small place. And he says, that quadrangle, that corridor is where generations of my family have sat and practiced the Shanai. And that is the holiest spot for me on earth.
Wow.
That place, that spot you cameraman, if you come to that spot, you will find nothing. There may be weeds growing in that quadrangle. There may be, you know, dirty. It might be dirty. It might not. Nobody, people are just walking across. But that spot is the holiest spot for me.
Amen.
And he says, with a twinkle in his eye, he says, can your camera catch the darshans I have had in that spot? He says, the kind of darshans I have been given in that spot. Wow. Can your cameras catch those darshans? I was like totally, you know, shocked. Yes. And so inspired, because he says that place has got that power because of constant sadhana in that one place. Yes. You know, the place acquires that power.
Yes.
Yes, of course it is. At a later stage of, you know, your sadhana, you can think of the Lord anywhere, you can think of just like all the time.
Just like you come to Prashanti,
right,
because of the power,
yes,
that Prashanti is charged with.
Correct.
Thanks to hundreds and thousands of people pouring their heart out in reverence and in praise of the Lord for decades and decades and scores of years together. So, yes, you are at a stage where when you come to Prashanti, you feel so elevated. But after some time, you become so elevated that you take Prashanti with you, and wherever you are, you create a Prashanti there.
Correct. And may I give a slightly nuanced thinking on this as well? I mean, this is my way of looking at it. Is Swami said it is wonderful to have a place because it disciplines you.
Yes.
Right. You do it at a particular time in a particular place.
Correct.
You get into that that rhythm.
Yes.
And that rhythm then you follow on a regular basis.
Yes.
And even if you're traveling, then you try to do it at the same time.
Correct.
So you develop that discipline.
Yes.
Discipline, determination, devotion,
yes,
duty. Like Swami said, the D's. So this is one of the D's where you have to cultivate. But the body, again, is like a moving temple. So if you are constantly thinking about God, then the place wherever you're going to go, you're also sanctifying the place.
Yes.
Okay. So it is necessary for one to move away from that one single spot. Yes. And treat the entire lot of the places that you move in,
yes,
as a good enough place to pray.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, what happens is we get into this mindset that it's enough to pray only at that time, that place,
yes,
and in that manner.
It's definitely a journey.
It is a journey.
It's a journey, and what Swami is concluding this entire Prema Vahini with is that people who have made this journey,
mm-hmm,
and people who have actually reached that state of selfless prayer for the welfare of the entire world, we should pray that more and more such people come to this earth,
yes,
so that their prayers redeem the entire world. I think that is how Swami is ending,
yes,
this.
He's ending it, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. There are two other points, if I may add.
Sure.
Yes.
One is about the mortality of the human body.
Mm.
And I know a lot of people hate to talk about death, but Swami dwells on death a lot, and he tells people, why are you so scared about death?
Mm.
Because you are in a train which is moving inexorably to death. Whether you're lying on the train, sitting on the train, or walking in the train, you're going to anyway go to the destination.
Mm.
So you may as well deal with it. And how to deal with it, he talks in the chapter on samskaras.
Mm.
He says you should be constantly ready for that one moment to develop that samskara for that one moment in life when you're going to ebb away from here.
Mm.
And hislop, when you were reading about hislop earlier, it reminded me once when he was coming to Puttaparthi, they were traveling in a car and they were overtaking a bus. You probably know of this incident as well. And there was another car or bus coming from the opposite direction. And the road was so small that it could not accommodate the car going into the shoulder, because there was no shoulder. It's a drop. On one side there was a bus, on the other side there was a drop. And he just caught his breath. And the next moment he saw the headlights, the rear lights receding. And when he came to Parthi, Swami called him in immediately and he said, Hislop, what happened? The car. He said, you didn't even take my name. See, that brings to mind the point in the samskaras that he was talking about Swami and about death, trying to connect the two.
Hmm.
We are constantly preparing for that one moment when our life is going to ebb. So we should always leave this life with the correct thought in our mind. And the entire lot of the spiritual practices,
yes,
are helping us develop that particular samskara for that moment.
Hmm.
So that we are God conscious.
Yes.
So if we restrict ourselves to a particular place, We basically, we are not developing that God consciousness. In a sense, not becoming Brahmanistas.
In fact, maybe we'll end with this. You know, our colleague Arvind Sai, who is part of the Prashanti Bhajan group, sometime in 2009, you know, he had to go once to Bangalore and to get his eyes checked up. And when he was, when he took Bhagwan's permission and he said, "Swami, tomorrow I will not be able to attend the bhajans, and I won't be able to come." Swami said, "Why?" He said, "Swami, I'm going to Bangalore. I will miss the bhajan." Swami said, "No. Where will you be tomorrow at 5:30? He said, "Swami, I will be in the train." He said, "Do it there. Do it in the train. Do the bhajans at that time in the train."
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Swami tells him. So it's a question of, you know, so wherever you are, it is how you have trained your mind to convert that place, that time, into a time of worship, into a place of reverence. And I think that is what Bhagavan is referring to. Wherever the mind revels in the contemplation of the divine, that is the holy place. Whenever it does so, that is the auspicious moment.
I just wanted to add this. You gave me a wonderful introduction. Swami made me change my line of practice. I think I mentioned this earlier. In 2016 was when we last had any interaction on when I used to practice corporate law. But Swami directly changed me into criminal defense practice.
Mm-hmm.
So for the last 2.5 years, I've been doing criminal defense. So some of the places I visit, like the prisons and the courts, are not nice places. There are a lot of problems. There's a lot of negative aura there. So I constantly have got into the habit now of thinking about Swami, talking to him in my mind while in the courtroom or in the prison or chanting the Gayatri Mantra.
Yes.
And it's an opportunity for me to bring God consciousness into these dark places.
Wow.
To protect not only the people around me, like a Wi-Fi, spread it out, you know, it's a Wi-Fi signal, but also to give me that strength and the fervor.
Yes.
And the determination and the purity to be in these places, which otherwise can affect very greatly.
Right. Yeah. Because you protect yourself also.
15,000 prisoners inside a prison and then walking in the night, sometimes I stay 3-4 hours talking to them to try and motivate them. So Swami's teachings have helped so much to understand the time, place, manner is not restricted to a temple visit on the weekend or a church visit on a Sunday school in the morning.
Yes.
It's necessary to bring him in and factor him into every thought, word and deed.
Absolutely.
During the day.
Wow. Sarvatra sarvakaleshu hari chintanam, as Swami used to say.
And that's beautiful because it makes me feel so good. And then it makes me feel bad when I don't think of him. I realize, oh my God, I didn't think of him now.
Well, that's the journey. That's the journey we are all in. Wow. So dear listeners, this is the journey we are all in, into prema through Prema Vahini, with the strength that love can give us. Ultimately, this journey is towards love. In an earlier session, we said how Bhagwan mentioned that among all the Purusharthas, it is Parama Prema, supreme love, that is the greatest Purushartha, and that is what we should only be striving for. And I think everything that we have discussed in all these more than 100 weeks since we started this session, it was all towards that this pavitrata, purity, is basically to attain that prema, that parama prema. And that is the journey that we are all in, and we really need to be with each other, help each other, inspire each other, and most important is we have to give this priority in our lives. This love should become priority number one in our lives. Only then we will become priority one for God. And once this takes precedence, everything else will fall into place. We will feel the presence, the fragrance of His presence in everything we do, wherever we are, however we are. And that is what will make of a life a series of divine celebrations. So in the coming episodes, probably we will spend a little more time summarizing and just collating our thoughts on whatever we have discussed in the few weeks, in these 100 weeks, and then we'll see how Swami guides us further on this Vahini Satsang. If you have any queries or comments, as always, please feel free to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also WhatsApp us. Our number is 9393-258-258. Once again, 9393-258-258. Thank you, Mr. Raj, for joining us. It is really wonderful to have you with us on this program.
Thank you, and pranams to Swami.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Sadam.